Welcome to the fourth episode of A Book I Love, the podcast collaboration between Women Writing Architecture and Madame ETH of GTA Exhibitions. Today, we're looking at Testo Junkie by Paul Preciado, Sex, Drugs and Biopolitics in the Pharmacopornographic Era. Published in 2008 in Spanish and French, then in English in 2013, published by Feminist Press, New York. Paul Preciado, formerly Beatrice Preciado, who appears in the book as BP, so the initials of Beatrice Preciado. And depending on which copy of the book you have, and I think we have several, mine is still authored by Beatrice Preciado, and from the fourth edition, the name changes to Paul Preciado. So this book is a proper genre shifter. It moves between, well, not between, it kind of completely mixes genres in, and is in this sense also very performative in how it kind of performs a different form of knowledge production. So it's memoir or a log or protocol of self-experimentation of BP taking testo gel. It's a performative theory, a theory of the self, or as BP introduces the genre of the book, semato-political fiction, a term that perhaps we can also get into a bit later. It's a history of the creation of gender. It's a manifesto for political action against bio power. It's auto-theory. It's a letter to GD, who we get introduced to right at the beginning of the book, Guillaume Dustin, the artist. And it also includes novelistic writing about the love affair between BP and VD, who we find out, or do we find out? I don't know. We know is Virginie Despentes. Maybe don't find out. I'm not sure, actually. So Preciado writes, just to shortly kind of introduce the book, about biopolitics after World War II. So the contemporary forms of biopower, which he names the pharmacopornographic era in which we're living now, which means the pharmaco and porno power that govern our bodies and subjectivities today. So on the one hand, Preciado argues that bodies are ever more regulated by pharmaceutical drug. The pill here features largely, but also Viagra, Prozac and other drugs. And on the other, how our collective imaginary of sex and sexuality is being defined by the porn industry and its logic of a quick satisfaction as the logic of consumption. This book was chosen by Paul Grigougis and Linda Sjöquist, who chose it in connection to the current exhibition at Kino Roland, which is by Queerformat and Nexpo, La Nouvelle Expo, running until Thursday at Sex Kino Roland, and which is where we are sitting today. Linda and Paul are joined by Alicia Iribakan from AKA Madame ETH, Helen Thomas from Women Writing Architecture, and Emily Apercy from Women Writing Architecture. Paul and Linda, would you like to start by saying why you chose the book? What touched you?
Hi. Paul and I, we decided to choose this book. We were mostly talking about also different books, but all the time we were returning to the theme of about changing, not being normed, and at the end of a brainstorming, we find out that this book of Paul Preciado is the one that makes the most sense, because it's really talking about this two different norms that it's stated by the gender, that is stated by our society today, and something that he's also saying in the book, that if we explode or change this or take away this only two way to see gender, and there's no more genders or no more sexes, then the society would change completely. And here in the with Queerformat and in the Kino Roland exhibition, it's also like kind of changing the space that what it used to be and what it's going to be. And it's again in a non-explaining place or space.
I totally agree, and I think that one specific thing was the context of the street and how overwhelmingly noisy, chaotic, and sometimes even scary it is, and kind of translate that into text. Maybe you do finally reach a version of Testo Junkie, because it's just so much to bear, and chapter by chapter you hold on, because there is definitely like a kind of a foundation of which chapter comes after which chapter. You know, there is a story being told, but it's so much that you kind of get heated in that kind of conversation that Testo that he's having with himself and with the people surrounding him, whether it's the death or the, in that case, the love affair or the sexual affair with VD, that just is so complex and almost sometimes you think just so toxic. That's what I really like about it, because that's what I feel like when I kind of cross this area in Zurich.
I think that having this discussion about Testo Junkie is so interesting for me. I'm the oldest in the group. And I think, you know, talking about a book like this really is something which is cross-generational. Having a cross-generational conversation about it is really, really interesting, because, you know, for me, this book is really a world-changing book, because it introduces a way of thinking about gender that really was very, very new to me when I encountered it. You know, this idea that really helped me to understand what the issues of transgender are, that gender is a construct, and the whole idea that it's so artificial that it can be created through chemicals, through drugs, I just found it, Preciado refers a lot to Foucault, and it reminds me of when I was in my early 20s and I encountered Foucault, and how that was an equally mind-changing, and I think it is about, I was reflecting upon it. I think it's really very much about this issue of boundaries, and we make our world creates so many boundaries and norms about what's normal and what isn't normal, and both of these writers and break down those boundaries and use history as a means to do that. You know, about how things change in terms of politics and structures of knowledge in the sense of Foucault. But I think what's interesting about Preciado is that it's about something much more visceral. It's what you were saying, I think, when you, in your introduction, it's about the lived experience, and that is just amazing.
If I can add on that, also in his book, he's always talking by eye, and one chapter is really like kind of almost scientific, the way he explains and has references and so on, and then it's followed or expressed in the story of himself, and it's kind of really putting up to in day-to-day life a theory that he writes about, and I think that's also really way more striking than just reading a theory about he or it, and there it's about the my person, my experience, and how it's different. And I think this is also really strong in this book. Mm-hmm. And I think also as we are reading in the first person, it's also way more personal also for mm-hmm. us as readers than other books. And also you were talking about Foucault, and I was also listening to different podcasts, also one with Lorraine Bastide and Paul Preciado, and they were talking about just before COVID, Preciado was doing a seminar talking about those theory, but with sex and genders, which Foucault was not really talking about in his theories and books. And he's saying he missed it, but he's not saying what Foucault said was wrong, but he wants to do like an add-on or like an addition of his experience. And I think, yeah, this is really interesting.
I totally agree. And I think that like one word, or at least a couple of words that I think about is like history of technosexuality, adding that techno from technogender to history of sexuality, which is a Foucault body of work, and then understanding that it's again an add-on, and then again that kind of combination with that protocol of his life, that mixture, it wouldn't work, and then somehow it does, and then you kind of can't wait for the next chapter, as I said, and then you go from work, from term to term to term, and it keeps justifying each argument and making it stronger. My favorite words, though, or like my favorite themes are when he takes something completely heteronormative at first, the pill, or in terms of the book that I first read from Preciado being Pornotopia, the bachelor pad, and making it the most queerest thing you could ever imagine, something completely homosexual. There's something homosexual behind, you know, men on roided men full of steroids in a gym. There's just something very gay about that. And then he just puts it to perfect words by following up in that kind of story setting that I just really appreciate, because again, it's overwhelming, it's too much, but it you need to follow through to get to the conclusions. Another word that I really liked was the auto guinea pig, because I started to get inspired by that and take it onto myself to also perhaps not experiment with drugs or with pharmaceuticals, but with lives, with toys, with sex and with sexual experiences. And that makes very, you need to kind of write that down in some way. Otherwise, you'll forget it. So I understand why Preciado did that for Testo Junkie.
Yeah, maybe just to add, I would follow up with what Helen said. For me, it was also like a kind of eye-opener and very good in explaining everything in a very like kind of radical way, but in the same time, then through these personal experiences, gives it kind of a lightness, even though it's like super dramatic in a way, which I really felt connected to, even though I didn't like live the same life. I felt really close to his personal life in a way, and I almost then sometimes felt like I couldn't catch my breath, especially when the text then got really theoretical again. I was like reading it very, very fast, and I couldn't even like breathe while reading it, because it were like so many words and so many things that were all connected together. And I was asking myself, like, who am I? What am I doing here? Who's controlling me? I thought it was like really an experience even to read this book, like re-experiencing also experiences from the past, like over and over again, or moments where I felt controlled by the norms of society, but I only understood now while reading the book, kind of this another hamster in the wheel feeling. And it kind of hurt me also. I felt a little bit naive and dumb. And I mean, it's quite powerful if somebody makes you feel a feeling like that when you're like just going over words that are like black printed on some white paper. I mean, it's crazy. I was almost like, sometimes I had to put the book aside and just like let it in, but then let it out again, because it almost made me like a little bit dizzy. Super powerful words.
I mean, yeah, for me, that's what I mean by world-changing. I mean, for something to be world-changing, it doesn't literally change the world. It changes your relationship to the world. And I think that this book, you know, for somebody of my age, and it's interesting, Elissa, you're the youngest, you know, we're both of us. That's why, you know, that's what Foucault did to me. It's like, it's like a physical blow. It's like, what? And, you know, and in a sense, this reminds me, weirdly, of Hilary Mantel's writing. And she writes very much about the physical world. She doesn't write, I mean, I think that this is a very interesting way of writing, of using a very, very visceral, physical, material, descriptive world in order to carry across theoretical thinking. I don't know, did you have a thought on that, Emily?
I mean, from what has been said and what you just said, Alicia, and this, for me, it's a lot about the representation of the body. Like, he goes through this transformation, taking testosterone, so he goes through different states of masculinity, femininity, and he says, so he has like moments where he's not anymore a woman. From the administration, you are just a number from different perspectives. And this I linked with the architecture, the body in the city, in the physical world, and the architecture actually in the city. And it's interesting. I had a discussion with a friend of mine a few weeks ago, and he was telling me, each time I look, he's not an architect, and he was saying, each time I look at a building, I'm always asking myself if it's masculine or feminine. And it's interesting because it's about perception, and for me, I couldn't see the building without thinking of the whole process behind, without thinking of the client, of thinking of the investor behind, thinking of the whole negotiation that had happened behind what you see in the facade of the building. So the facade is the result of all those things.
I mean, I like this thought also of the facade, and somehow, you know, the facade as being like maybe defined, and then one of the striking also images of the, because there are also some images and graphics in the book and drawings and kind of, and one thing that struck me was this comparison between the panopticum and the drawing of the pill, which, you know, he lays one over the other, and then panopticum was being this external architecture of disciplinary architecture, and the pill being the internal disciplinary architecture, and this transition between this external disciplinary architecture to the internal of the pill, and where also then Preciado is saying, okay, the way for resistance is that we can internally also go against this internal architecture, which becomes the manifesto of the book, which is this I speaking and taking testosterone, and in a way that's very experimental.
I mean, this panopticon is such a Foucauldian motif, and you know, when I was reading the book, and I had to check it with a kind of like search, that I find it really interesting that he didn't mention Bataille. who, and this like idea of the, because it's so full of the excess energy of the world, and this idea of, I mean, it's a real critique of capitalism and the capitalist system, and it's using this energy and this notion of pornography as this, I don't know, like, you know, how they spend 2 days just having sex, you know, that it is a totally unproductive activity. It doesn't contribute to the productive world in any way whatsoever. And it really makes me think of Bataille's idea of potlatch and deliberately wasting energy as a means to power. And I think that is so inherent in what Preciado is doing. I wonder, I mean, is it a kind of philosophical snobbery against Bataille? Because, I mean, he's studying philosophy. I mean, in the book, he's talking about that. Because I know that you've made an amazing glossary of words, which I think are really, you know, it's a philosophical intent.
You know, when I think of panopticon, and I really love Foucault, just for this, I think it's Jeremy Bentham's prison design, actually. But then I think, so basically what Preciado's also trying to mention is how this disciplinary society is going to a control society. Mm-hmm. And I'm sometimes, I don't know if I always agree, and maybe I didn't understand it well enough, but I still see myself not having a choice and being disciplined by society. I don't always feel like I have that choice in that, or at least maybe anymore, in that setting of, I think the biopolitics is that kind of general word for caring, and what kind of economy that fulfills that. That word is over-material, it's not material or immaterial. I hope I'm not confusing the listeners now, but it just becomes so embedded with the body and with nothingness, and yet then you get very, very scared, as kind of Alicia says, that I get very feared, like, it's all been calculated for me. It's not like there is that choice. I wasn't asked, I was told. And that's, I think, the scariest, that you sometimes think you've had this free economy when, no, everything kind of was selected for you in some sense. And that's, I think, maybe what I connect to Bataille.
Is that you connecting to the Bataille? I mean, I was just thinking, you know, this idea of the night of non-knowledge. I mean, you know, that to me is really a very sexual thing, you know, this completely, you know, it's a way of not being in this world. Is being in a 2-day like sexual escape from this system.
Yeah, it's true. And also to add on what Paul was saying, and like the path is already made to put us in a production place after, like we study or we read to go and work, and then we need money to live. And this is the point where when you decide to not be productive, like you cannot almost live, because then you don't win money or you cannot do things. And also you see his life, his work, he's kind of working or writing his philosophical book, he's receiving money from the French state because he's doing a PhD, but then he's also like buying his testosterone, and he can only do it because he can buy this testosterone. It's so many questions at the time, like, can we manage to find an equilibrium today to not to work but just enough to live, and to not be productive and be productive? And I think it's really difficult. It's what we all asking ourselves, or also the same as Paul, Alice, and everyone. When I read that, I was like, damn, I didn't choose really who I am. I was put in the case, and this is the path, and I did question it, but it's like not as much as the book, and as profound as the book does. Mm. But I think this point of production, it's almost a bit sad it's not more in the book, because I think it's really interesting. And also today, with the free production of women being at home, caring for the family and doing all this work that is not bringing money to them, but helping the economy.
Well, yeah, absolutely. He makes reproductive work productive, and that's, I think, a really interesting aspect of the writing.
No, I just had a question, Linda. You are young architects, no? Working, and how does the reading of this text challenges you? But also, I know, preparing the talk, you were mentioning Christine de Pizan. I know that it's a text that touched you since a year or two. You are speaking about it, and there are a lot of connection to me between the two. And it has been, for a woman writing architecture, quite a star, because in the Pizan, because she has been multiple times annotated, is one of her top five. And it's interesting to understand how, I mean, she wrote, I don't know, it was in 1407 or something like that, how her writings are still politically challenging her contemporary world.
I think with Christine de Pizan, what's really striking is like she gets out of the case that as a woman in the Middle Ages, she decided to write a book. And she comes out of this case of doing a man's work that only men are doing it. And then she's also criticizing this book, I think, I don't recall the name, but a book that was really misogynistic. And she also is calling out this book by saying, yeah, it's not really right. And she's already talking about like women, like feminism in a way, even though she doesn't use the word. And she's also talking about building this different world where women, she's explaining different or telling stories of different really important women throughout history that were a little bit forgotten. And that's already in the Middle Ages. And of course, it's not really about gender, but Paul Prestado is also kind of doing the same by going out of the gender and saying maybe we shouldn't have genders anymore, and it should be way more fluid. And I think Christine de Pizan is also going out of her case of being a woman in the Middle Ages and writing and going, and she, the difference is that Christine de Pizan is imagining a new world, then Paul Preciado is kind of really applying his theory to his life. And that's maybe the difference, but kind of the similarity of trying to build, and also Paul Preciado is trying to keep his non-gender, or to be non-gender specified, and always saying, yeah, I'm now a man, but I'm not really a man because I was a woman and I'm in between. And I think that's also this speciality. I think it's also really interesting.
That reminds me of one specific scene in the, I say scene because I just imagine it, in the book where he just looks at his arms and says, this is gonna be my genitals if I select this conventional way of creating a sexual organ for transgender men. And maybe I don't want to follow that way. Maybe I want to build my own, you know, sex, my own organ. And I really like that because that kind of brings one word that inspired me or inspires me currently with my choices in say, my profession, if we want to give it a bold name, is appropriation. I don't have to follow the instruction manual of the testosterone because it says only cis males are cis males with who have sex with women are allowed to use this pill. I will try to be like Preciado and say, I will just use it and see what happens and make it work for myself. After all, Preciado is still alive, so thank God. But, you know, like this is a sign that you don't, a motif that maybe following that rule book sometimes does, like that dogmas, even though they are scientifically recommended in that, you know, biopolitical sense, you can start questioning certain things if they are, if you then take that Preciado point of view and see how society wants to conform you to that male and female bubble and then eventually break out of it. And you can do that with anything, you know. You don't have to use that object for its conventional purpose all the time.
I also think that this thought about body as like an experimental and fluid space is very interesting. And then the connection between, I think, Jose Esteban Munoz adds a comment to the book and says interconnectedness of sex and drugs. And I see the connection, like, it's very, for me, like, as Helen mentioned, I'm the youngest probably in the round, and I have a lot of people around me like experimenting with drugs or experimenting with different kind of medications also. And I mean, I'm not here to advertise drugs, but I feel that the connection between sex and drugs is weirdly like so true in a way that we are given drugs, like prescribed drugs that we don't know about really. We just go to our doctors, they prescribe us something and we take them in the kind of hope that we get like better or whatever. But nobody's like trying out what works for them. Always following, usually following like trends or some advice from somebody. And like listening to the own body would be, I think, really a good choice to make, especially freeing ourselves from choices that we may not have made if not anybody else would have told us. Yeah, I just thought it was a good comment from Munoz.
Yeah, sure. No, that connects to what you're saying, which I think is a really interesting point in the Preciado, but when he starts to talk about the witchcraft and the Silvia Federici argument and going back to medieval times. And I think, you know, that's really interesting because, again, it gives this historical depth where, you know, we start to realise that our modern constructed world, the outcome of which is pharma, pharmacopornographic this amazing word that he's invented. So yeah, I think that's a really good point, you know, about, you know, witchcraft is very much about being aware of your body, as you say, and we've become so used to being passive in this sense, and passive consumers of drugs and medicine. And
yeah, also when he talks about the Middle Ages, and as you said, it's like the basis of today's world and society in Europe. Yeah, it's also like true, because they took away the right for women to do this work, and they were witches because they had certain knowledge that wasn't really appreciated as working or do something productive. They had another knowledge of with the medication and plants and nature, which men didn't understand, and they got scared. And I think this is also to go again with your question, how I do as an architect today. I mean, only working since a month, but yeah, it's I think it's like in a world where we only had references by men, and a world that was constructed by men, references, and by, as he says also, Preciado, as assumed heterosexual men, which we don't know actually. And yeah, it's sometimes I always ask myself, how are, it's maybe super simple, but like, how would I live there, or how would I move in this space that I design now? Would I feel comfortable? And I think sometimes when you work in an office with more men, then it's like a question, like sometimes you design and so on, and they find it all nice, and then you look at it and you're like, oh, I would not feel comfortable in there, and then you have to, like, I say it. Or I think it's not practical as a woman because, you know, you do often, and sadly, you're most likely to do care work at home, so for this and this it's not practical, I see problems and so on, and then they're like, oh yeah, right, you're right, or yeah, it makes a point, but it's so simple. And it's only been a month, but I think it's one of the biggest small difference that I can see next to the studies, where a lot of people already talking about it, and it's kind of integrated in more or less with the students.
Maybe it's why I see also the link to the, I was wondering how you get aware of this, and how maybe I make the link also to the text from Christine de Pizan, how you read those texts from, I mean, there are a lot of connection between the Preciado and Christine de Pizan, but how you read those texts from the past, how they make you aware of certain things today. And I don't know, there is something in the writing of Christine de Pizan where she speaks from her perspectives, her experience as a woman, that her husband died and she had to take care of the children on her own, and she's criticizing mostly like how women are educated at the time. What I find interesting is like how she, the instruments she uses in the writing to, you say, she was feminist, but how she always talk about her criticizing, but she's also using allegories, I think, in the book of the City of Ladies, where it's about like coming into dialogue with the maybe problematics that are not from like things that she experienced herself. And I think Paul Preciado is also, there is this like in the structure of the Testo Junkie, there is a lot about that. I thought he speaks about his own perspective, what's happening to him, and put that into a more social, economical context in the history. But yeah, how actually both of them are really, I found, experimental in the way they use the writing, and how this is a way to think about these political regimes that are structuring everything.
I mean, I think it came up early when you were talking about Christine de Pizan, that she was making a response to a piece of writing by a man. And I think that's often a strategy that's, you know, Mary Wollstonecraft was doing the same thing. So was Sor Juana de la Cruz, you know, not much later than Christine de Pizan in Mexico. So I think that, you know, there's this kind of like reaction to the male structuring of the world. And I think what your point that you make, Emily, about the way of the kind of the form of the writing. So, you know, is it taking on the same kind of scientific or objective form, that kind of a male distance from reality, or is it this much, much closer, visceral engagement? And I think that's definitely something that Preciado is doing in their writing. You know, and Sor Juana uses poetry in order to communicate her ideas. And I think, you know, this—it's almost like a rhythm of. I mean, I think you said at the beginning, Paul, there's this intense physicality, and then stepping back, and it's a kind of much more Foucauldian, historical, philosophical discussion. And so you're constantly going in and out of in this rhythm, and it's very powerful.
I think another maybe lineage that I feel Preciado is continuing, which is also this writing with being induced by drugs, or in his case hormones, which, you know, you could beat writers or Burroughs to mainly also like the kind of tradition of male writers, where I feel like he's also kind of performing a certain perhaps masculinity in writing,
but completely. This idea of the sublime transcendental experience.
Yes, but then also in the writing, and then literally, you know, shifting that. Yeah.
You mentioned male, and I wanted to always, like, I just almost wanted to butt in and say white male, because that white male heterosexual, I think my invented quote is the white male heterosexual boner is like the most important thing, more important than the death of African people, you know, from malaria. Like, we will first create that potentia gaudendi. That's also another favorite word of mine. That before anything else, and I realize it's true, but it makes you sad and angry and want to not read the book anymore, and then you're still hooked on again. You're hooked on, like, probably him with his testosterone. I'm hooked onto this book till the very end. And I can only suggest to anyone to read this book. Of course it's 430 pages, but you'll get over it.
430 pages of erection and frustration.
Exactly.